Welcome to the Form of Fitness podcast, where you will learn the most that there is to learn about fitness. Through mechanism, about dieting, motion itself, and many more, you will follow me and my co-host Duncan as we talk about these things as they are related to our personal lives, as well as they are related to the health industry and how they affect us and people around us every day. We thank you for listening. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Form of Fitness podcast. Today we are going to be talking about heart rate variability. So as far as this goes, we're going to kind of talk about it from a few different angles. First on, we're going to let you know what heart rate variability is. We're going to talk about maybe some devices that people are using to track it and why it's important. And then also, let's say, what's happening energy-wise, given different like areas of or different ranges of heart rate variability, or where your heart rate's at. So I'm just going to hand it off to you and let you start.
Yeah. So first off, when we talk about heart rate variability, I think units are very important. Maybe that's just the engineer in me, but like being able to visualize what units you use for a movement or for any type of practice, I think is very important. It's like if we're talking about lifting weights and someone's measuring things in tons, it's like, whoa, you're expected to move a lot. Someone's measuring something in pounds, okay. Someone's measuring something in ounces, it's like, okay, so that's not being moved a lot. So with heart rate variability, it's measured in milliseconds, I believe is the MS engineering. Yep milliseconds. And so that kind of gives you a scale for how much the variability is, right?
And beats per minute. So yeah. Like there is a given, milliseconds between beats, given what beats per minute you're getting. Mm-hmm. Milliseconds is a little bit more of a clinical definition. And what that looks like is like on a heart monitor, you'll notice that there is a certain amount of time between the, you know, large spikes, which is when your heart is contracting.
Yeah. So with heart rate variability, you know, it can range usually kind of low. I've seen like low 50s, low 25s. Usually that's towards the more unhealthy range. And then kind of go all the way up to like 118, even further into that 100 range. Probably about once you get past 200, that's where you might need to see a doctor for some other problems.
Cause, if you're a normal person.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even for like Olympic athletes and stuff, having too high of a heart rate variability is a problematic thing. Mm-hmm. It's kind of where you're bordering onto arrhythmia, which is just when your heart is not beating like it should be, you know, regularly. And yeah, while that in and of itself is not necessarily a terrible thing, it could be indicative of other problems. Mm-hmm. And it's always something that you should consult your doctor with.
Right. And this goes hand in hand with like blood pressure, given how fast your heart's beating. So like, you know, there's problems you're going to have if your heart can't get blood to the extremities of your body because the passageways are clogged up. That's going to lead to increased blood pressure. And on top of that, your heart might have a hard time pulling that blood in to then pump it out, you know, mm-hmm. trying to cycle it. So that's another thing that can cause a little bit of heart rate variability. I guess let's just talk about why this is something we're talking about as opposed to, you know, what it is.
So basically when you're talking about heart rate variability, there's two processes in the body where mm-hmm. it matters a lot. You have your sympathetic and parasympathetic responses. I don't know if we've really talked about them that much on this show, but think about your sympathetic responses, the I need to do shit response. It's the fight or flight response. Mm-hmm. It's the I need to move this, you know, 500-pound deadlift bar up to my waist and drop it. I need to do these squats. I need to run this marathon. I need to do something, and I need to do it now. Your parasympathetic response is more the chill, vacation, reading a book, going to sleep. And heart rate variability is at its highest during the parasympathetic parts of our life, especially when you're asleep. That's why if you have a fitness tracker, usually if it does show heart rate variability, at the very least, it always has it when you're asleep. And then sometimes they'll monitor it during the day. It just kind of depends on what their optimization is within the system UI and everything else is. Now, it does make sense to have a higher heart rate variability during your parasympathetic parts of your life as opposed to your sympathetic parts, because your heart rate is usually lower. This kind of goes along with like your resting heart rate. And so if you have like a resting heart rate of 40, you can expect a heart rate variability to be higher just because it can be. It doesn't, it has more time between the 40 beats per minute to actually kind of shift around. Yep. And then the reason why it's important is because it is a very good indicator of longevity. It's a pretty good indicator of performance. A lot of like sprinting athletes, strength athletes, anybody who has to be able to switch gears really quickly, they want high heart rate variabilities because it has been shown in study after study that it helps them make that transition faster. Mm-hmm. And it's not just like the mental, you know, gun gets blown, I have to go. It's not just the reaction speed. It's literally the speed for you to be able to go from like 0 to 60.
Yep. Yeah, it's the change. And one thing about that is having a low heart rate, low resting heart rate, can sometimes mean that you have both good cardiac health and clear passageways, which is important, but there's also, you know, like too low. When your heart rate is too low, that is unhealthy, especially when we're talking, I mean, realistically, even sub 40. Some people would even consider sub 50 weird, depending on, you know, what age you're at, you know, what is your, you know, cardiovascular health looking like. That's a big important one. My resting heart rate is in the upper 50s. Most times when I'm just sitting still resting, sometimes it'll get lower than that, sometimes down to 50. And especially if my workout stack is a lot more built around cardiovascular training, doing a lot more stamina-based exercises, you know, more running, more low steady state cardio, stuff that keeps me at an inclined heart rate, I'm able to go a little bit lower because my heart is in a little bit of a better condition, and I let blood flow at a higher rate a little bit more frequently just by exercising. Yeah. When I'm in like a really, when I'm really exerting it, a lot of times my heart rate will get up to like 170. The highest I've really seen it go is like mid 180s, but I am sprinting and have been sprinting for a little bit, you know.
And there's a heart rate formula too for the maximum ranges, and it's something like, we'll say 200 minus your age, or 220 minus your age, maybe somewhere around there, and that gives you like a safe high end for your heart rate. Yep. I know from personal experience that if you go towards the 30s in resting heart rate, mine was like a 32. The cops will be called on you if you have a heart monitor on. just as a wellness check situation. So anything that low can be worrisome, but again, it's also not incredibly uncommon. When I went in to see the doctor after that like episode, I guess, they basically said, endurance athletes and Olympic athletes sometimes have super low heart rates. It's indicative of good performance as long as you're not having a heart attack or a heart blockage or something like that. Yeah.
And that also ties in with, you know, what is your oxygen saturation in your blood?
Yeah.
Making sure that, you know, basically your blood is just giving oxygen to your cells. And if it's not doing that, it is going to pump faster to get more oxygen to those cells. And saturation is a little bit indicative of that. If you have low saturation, even like sickle cell anemia, this can cause you to have really low oxygen saturation in your blood, which means that your blood is going to need to be pumped to your cells faster just to maintain a healthy level of oxygen in your cells.
So. Yeah, and something else that like looking at your heart rate variability or kind of creating goals to lower it can help with certain issues like high blood pressure, diabetes, heart arrhythmia, asthma, anxiety, and depression. Mm-hmm. And I think like anxiety is a really big one, especially for people our age, where it's like, even if you don't think you're being super anxious and on edge all the time. If you have like a monitor, say an Oura Ring, and it shows you the graph of your HRV over time, and you realize that every now and then, whenever there's a test coming up or like finals week, all of a sudden your heart rate variability drops like a rock. It's like, yeah, that's stress. And so there's a lot of things that you can do, not only working out, but also there's been a lot of studies to show that like meditation and a lot of these more like relaxing type activities can really help you manage your heart rate variability. Because while it's a really good measure of you being able to transition from parasympathetic to sympathetic responses, it also is trained very well by you being able to tolerate anxiety and stress. And it kind of is a reoccurring feedback loop to the point of if you learn how to handle stress, your heart rate variability will go up, and then that will also help you deal with stress a bit.
Yeah, and that's definitely there too. Another big component to this is caffeine intake. Caffeine intake can modify your heart rate variability, you know, just because you might settle at a little bit of a more heightened heart rate like I am now. Just because of the amount of caffeine I've had today, it keeps you running at a little bit of a higher level of heart rate as opposed to being able to rest a little bit more thoroughly. But that's, again, just a side effect of caffeine on most people. There are, you know, a handful of exceptions to that. And like in my case, I can tell pretty thoroughly when I have not been doing cardiovascular exercise. You know, I'll use heart rate monitor, either, you know, my Apple Watch or the one that's built into, like, let's say a treadmill or any other piece of equipment, and just, you know, kind of gauge what it's doing given what how hard I'm working. So I can tell because a lot of times when I try to do some steady state cardio, I'll end up above the what is considered a steady state cardio heart rate if I have not been doing it very frequently. Like recently, I, you know, last week, I was getting back into, you know, adding a little bit of cardio like this at the end of my workout, just for, you know, again, anxiety management and other things like that. It kind of forces you to breathe more properly too, because you're at this heightened rate and you've got to get that air in. Otherwise, you're just going to, you know, pass out or something like that. And it's come down, and a lot of times with the same. At the same speed, at the same incline, let's say on a treadmill, I'm getting back down to the 120 range where I like to be at that given work level, because I don't I won't modify anything, and I'll just track my heart rate to kind of give one constant to change, which is me and my ability to manage that work as well as to breathe properly while doing that exercise.
Yeah, and you do have to be conscious and understanding of the fact that, like, when you're dealing with trackers, they're not the most accurate in the world. No. It's like, I know off the top of my head that the Apple Watch has about a 20% margin of error when it comes to tracking calories. And of course, calories aren't the same thing as your heart rate. Yeah. Heart rate is a much more well-defined concept than a calorie is. But it is important to understand that just because your tracker or just because your wearable says a certain number doesn't necessarily mean that that's true. However, looking at trends over time, that's usually a pretty good way of understanding what's going on, because if it's rare that, like, let's say your Apple Watch is tracking your calories and it's 19% overestimating how much you burn. It's rare that it will swap to like 19 and then 15 and then it'll go like, oh, you're burning 20% less this time. Yeah. Like, usually it stays within the margin of error that it's in and with the over or mis under calculation that it's in. And so if you ever see like something spike, maybe it's time to go see the doctor, you know, and you should probably never go to the doctor and be like, well, this is what my wearable is saying, fix it. It should probably be more of a conversation with, hey, I'm feeling this way because you're probably going to have some symptoms of something. And then you can also say, and just like as circumstantial evidence, here's also this data that I've been presented with.
Yeah. So like, especially in regards to that inaccuracy, one example that I have happen all the time is, again, when I'm on the treadmill and, you know, trying to gauge my heart rate. I don't do this all the time, but I do it frequently enough to kind of be, it's the most familiar I am with this, is I'll be sweating my ass off. And what happens is those metal pads, they just get messed up by my hands being sweaty, and it being very high salt content causes the way for it to measure to just completely fuck up. And I mean, like, really badly. Like, one time I had sweat just running down my face, and I was sweat. It was all over the machine, and I was sweating really, really hard. I've been doing cardio for 35 minutes. You know, I've gone through a water bottle. I've taken a break to refill it. You know, I sweat a lot.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's on my hands and stuff like that. And I check the heart rate thing, and it tells me my heart rate is 63 beats per minute, which is just completely false. You know,
yeah, you I was like, measure your pulse, and you're like,
wrong. I'm like, so, you know, that's an obvious case of it being wrong, but, you know, in more of like a micro error way, how is it just wrong at calculating? There could also be internal math within the system that's just already coded in that is an improper way of calculating, which I've seen happen. Like, specifically with some treadmills, if you go at too high of an incline and then start going too fast, the calorie counter, like it where it tells you how many calories it expects you to burn, completely out of this, like it'll just completely fry itself on the math. Like,
you're dealing with exponential curves, and and math doesn't work well once
or it
you
goes
go
up
too
to a
high
five
above,
digit number on how many calories you're going to be burning per hour, because you're going 6 miles an hour up a 30 degree incline. It's like, you know, you're running uphill, man. Like, you're gonna burn 10,000 calories you do this for an hour. So, like, specifically a good example of this is anyone at Charlotte, if you use the incline trainers in the UREC, put that thing up to 30 degrees and then try and walk faster than 4 miles an hour. And it drops the, like, calories from about like 2,300 an hour. Well, at like my height and weight, and age, but it just drops it down to like 40 calories. And then the calorie counter messes up. And I've had this happen. I'm like, I know I'm burning more than 40 calories an hour right now.
Like, you could be flipping a switch somewhere in there where it just doesn't have the capacity to handle the the size of the number you're dealing with. There are a lot of issues with technology in terms of, like, not knowing how something's fucking up. But understanding that something is definitely in there messing up.
So a little bit on the inaccuracy of the system, and the systems are definitely getting better. I mean, that we're talking about, like, low tech here, low, you know, intelligence tech. We're talking about the built-in function on a treadmill, you know, as opposed to like the Oura Ring or, you know, your Apple Watch or Fitbit, something like that, which is a little bit more active. They can update them, you know, so they're going to have a little bit better ways of just monitoring and tracking, or in some cases, just taking the data they receive and not making any inferences on it, and then using some sort of cloud computing to do that instead. So, I guess one thing we should talk about is, like, I've been bouncing around the point, is like steady state cardio, not steady state cardio in regards to, like, heart rate. And like I said at the beginning, energy expenditure. So when we're talking about, like, steady state cardio, we're talking about, you know, keeping your heart rate down, but being active, you know, anywhere between, like, if you're, let's say, like, for me, anything between like 90 beats per minute and about 125, 130, I would consider ballpark steady state, where the majority of the energy that I'm going to be expending is going to be fatty tissue. That's, as opposed to something like my glycogen stores, carbohydrates, which we've talked about a little bit, but once you get up into those, you know, upper heartbeat range, you know, like for me, 140 to 180, even 190 in the very, very extreme would be, you know, that I'm using all simple carbs. I'm using those simple sugar stores, glycogen, as we talked about. That just burns up really quick, and that's why you feel gassed really quick. And then you're trying to catch your breath. Your body's trying to remanipulate stores of energy and stuff like that, which is why in the case of us talking about, like, weight loss, one of the best ways to do that and it just fall off of you is steady-state cardio. It's what people suggest, just because it's not extremely taxing. You can do it for a pretty decent amount of time. You can maintain good breathing, and your body is not running on a store of energy that is so small and finite that you're just gonna keep doing it. Yeah. So, you have anything you want to add? All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.
See you.
Hi guys, this is Nathan. I just wanted to thank you for listening to this episode of Former Fitness Podcast. If you like this and are looking for more content like it, there are plenty more podcasts from our studio, Uptown Audio, at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte that you can go and listen to. Those will be linked in our link tree that'll be attached in the description of this podcast wherever you're receiving it. Thank you guys so much for listening. It does truly mean a lot to us, and we hope you all have a great day.